You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Hey folks, it's Ben here with a couple of new quick announcements. We have a new Twitter handle that's probably more in line with the current direction of the show. It's at KickAssNewsPod, instead of the previous name, at KA Politics. If you're already following us on Twitter, you don't need to refollow us or change a thing. It'll just update our name in your Twitter feed. So don't be alarmed when you see at KickAssNewsPod. It's just me. Also, we're in the midst of raising our production budget for 2017, so if you enjoy the show, I really hope you'll consider showing your support by making a donation to GoFundMe.com/kickassnews. And even if you can't do that, another way you can support the podcast is by patronizing some of our great sponsors. Be sure to use the links and promo codes mentioned in our advertisements or get them from our sponsor page, because that lets our advertisers know that you're a Kick-Ass News listener. And it also gets you in on some great offers and big-time discounts just for fans of the show. Finally, if you have a moment, please take our listener survey at podsurvey.com/kick. And now, enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass News. A few months ago, I did a 2-part series on the future of artificial intelligence, and in part 2, I talked with Sam Vinson and Jonathan Brackley, who are the co-creators and executive producers of the BBC and AMC television show Humans. The dramatic series takes place in the near or parallel future, in which people live and work alongside a servant class of eerily humanoid robots called synthetic humans, or synths. Toward the end of last year's season 1, these synths begin to show glimmers of human-like consciousness. But in season 2, which kicks off tonight, Monday, February 13th at 10/9 Central on AMC, synths continue to learn and adapt even faster, hurtling ever closer to that superintelligence explosion that AI theorists have dubbed the singularity, the moment when machines surpass humans. And with it comes all kinds of big questions that may not be so far from reality. Like, what kind of backlash might come from the robot takeover of increasingly skilled jobs? Do machines that have human-like consciousness and intelligence then deserve human rights? And might computers one day unlock the key to eternal life? Today I'll talk about those and more when I welcome the creators of Humans, Jonathan Brackley and Sam Vincent, back on the podcast. And then I'll talk with the stars of Humans, Gemma Chan, Tom Goodman Hill, and Sam Palladio. Gemma Chan plays a synthetic human, or synth, who has achieved consciousness, and in this season, we see her develop surprisingly human feelings for a man struggling to make ends meet and understand his own emotions, played by a new addition to the cast, Sam Palladio. And Tom Goodman Hill returns as a working man who initially in season one embraced synths, actually more than just embrace them, but in season two, he begins to see them as a threat to both his job and his family. Today we'll discuss how consciousness might spread among intelligent machines, what that moment of realization might be like from their perspective, and whether recent behavioral and psychological disorders arising from kids' attachment to smart devices might foreshadow an even more disturbing problem to come. Plus, the lovely Gemma Chan shares what it's like to go to synth school. We cover robot marriage counselors, hot robot human love, and the Scarlett Johansson robot. Coming up with the cast and creators of AMC's Humans in just a moment. I'm happy to welcome Sam Vincent and Jonathan Brackley back to the podcast. They are the executive producers and co-creators of Humans. Guys, great to sit down with you in person this time.
Great. Absolutely, yeah. Thanks for having us back.
Well, last time we spent quite a bit of time talking about AI. I'm excited about this second season because there is so much going on in this season that mirrors things that I've been talking about over the past year with other guests who are futurists, robotics, AI experts, even economists. We have robots starting to take over higher skilled jobs up the ladder. Human rights is coming into it. The idea of being able to upload a person's consciousness. Has season two given you more freedom to explore a broader range of topics in the near future?
Yes, I think it has. It's the central conceit of this show, as was created by the original series, the Swedish series, which we adapted it from, allows us to do that. It's a 360-degree concept, as we always say, in that because you're going from the ground floor, it's about a family, set in the parallel present, that we get to tell all sides of those stories and all of those things you just said, the civil rights, people losing their jobs, uploading consciousnesses. It's all in there, and we find that the format, the DNA of the show allows us to do that and keep going to new places.
Before, we talked about some of the research and some of the books that informed your writing on the first season. AI and robotics advances so quickly. I wonder if in writing season two, were there other books or other research that's informed some of the issues that you're dealing with in season two?
We've certainly been lucky enough to talk to some AI experts and also an expert in consciousness while we were researching and writing the second series. So, talking to those people, they've been, invaluable in sort of furthering our understanding of AI. And certainly the AI expert that we've spoken to, one of the most interesting things he was talking about is that AI is going to be a tool for us. Whereas, a lot of the headlines around this subject matter are always looking toward the sort of dystopian view of AI and how the robots are going to rise up and kill us all in our beds. And obviously, there are very intelligent people like Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking saying that AI is going to be the next great existential threat to humanity. The people we've spoken to are a lot more optimistic. It's going to be a valuable tool, particularly for crunching sort of big data. The algorithms they use in AI will be able to sort of sort, understand, and interpret big data to help us fix the world's problems. Things like healthcare, like the economy, like the environment.
What John's saying is that Musk and Hawking don't know what they're talking about.
No, we make up our show and it's just like more incredible than what they say.
Well, since you brought it up, correct me if I'm wrong, but is there kind of an Elon Musk-y character in season two?
I think there is a Silicon Valley whiz kid, I guess you could say. he isn't based on Elon Musk, but I think he probably takes elements from all of those guys, you know, Musk and Zuckerberg and even Gates and all the rest of them. But he kind of, yeah, no, we kind of folded a lot of people that are incredibly interesting, some that we really admire, some that we don't admire, into this character. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, absolutely, because it's really, that does seem to be those kind of people who are at the forefront of this, mm-hmm. those companies. So we wanted to try and portray a little bit of that and capture mm-hmm. that side of it.
Yeah, and that character runs a company that is working on trying to actually purposefully give consciousness to synths. My question in thinking about that when I was watching it is, why would a human want to purposely create artificial intelligence and give it consciousness? That seems like, you know, assuring our own destruction, if you ask me.
Well, I don't know. I think I question that assumption. It's interesting.
Okay,
I mean,
I'm open.
Is creating another person, if you were creating another human being from scratch, mm-hmm. does that necessarily mean that they want to kill you just because you've...
Right.
Wouldn't they
love you as their creator?
That's
It's an interesting assumption that we you know, the other thing is, like John says, AI is sort of talked about in sort of the popular press in sort of scaremongering terms, mm-hmm. as if it's this kind of self-actuating force, mm-hmm. and it's almost like people lose sight of the fact this is something we're making it, you know, people are making
we're choosing to do this.
It's not coming out of nowhere, which is almost the kind of tone of the discourse around it, mm-hmm. that it's just coming and there's nothing we can do and we're all going to die. It's interesting. I think, I mean, as for why would you create consciousness, I mean, I think that's kind of goes back to sort of Prometheus and things like that, because if one, I mean, I guess on a, getting slightly philosophical and theological about it, if you could create an artificial human, mm-hmm. Then you have equaled the achievement of God, right?
Yeah.
Which is, there's a nice line in Ex Machina, which is obviously a film about these things, where Oscar Isaac's character is asked why he wants to create conscious machines, and he says, well, what do you mean, why? Why wouldn't you? Because you can, you know. On a sort of commercial level, I would say that you may want to grant a synth consciousness because you don't, and it's a line that we had in our first season, in that people don't just want to be served, they want to be loved. Hmm. So think about your relationship with your pet. Isn't that about the reciprocity of emotion? Mm-hmm. The fact that you are loved and it relies on you and loves you unconditionally. So I think there, you know, there's definitely a realistic commercial application for conscious machines.
And that's an interesting area that you're exploring in season two, because we are starting to see real synth-human relationships, possibly synths falling in love, figuring out what their sexual preference is, even trying to understand sex and appreciate it in a human way as opposed to being used as an object. It's an interesting new world in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think season two is about relationships. If season one was the season that was about families, the human family and the synth family and their interactions, then I think season two is about relationships between humans and synths, between synth and synths, between humans and humans, and all the difficulties, wonderful things and impossibilities that lie therein.
I haven't watched the entire season, but I'm wondering if at a certain point emotionally a synth hits a wall where they can experience a certain range of emotions and attachment to a person, but perhaps maybe they can't quite make the leap to a real loving relationship in the sense that humans understand it, at least.
That's an interesting
idea. Alternatively, maybe they feel more.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a synthetic consciousness is somehow a greater, more encompassing consciousness than humans. Maybe we're the ones that are limited.
That's
in
interesting.
Our consciousness.
You know, in season two, consciousness is spreading slowly like a virus, they say, which is exactly how AI theorists have indicated that it might happen. But when I've talked to them, they also say that it could grow at an exponential rate.
Spoilers?
No,
we don't want to give too many spoilers.
No.
Certainly, prospect of an exponential growth is causing some some forces, some agencies
there is certainly an intelligence explosion, I think, the term they use, on the horizon in the world of our show.
So maybe more likely than inertia, I guess. Can we put it that way? It's probably not going to slow down.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, one thing that we all talked about, I guess, about 6 months ago is the idea that once you give a machine consciousness, is it then entitled to some kind of human rights? And I was excited to see that that's something that you're exploring in season two.
I mean, it's something we absolutely wanted to get into. Because we sort of don't see that you could possibly argue against the idea that if you could satisfy yourself that machine had some level of consciousness and feeling, you would then have to explore the question of granting it some sort of rights. Because if we think of consciousness is on a sliding scale, it's not just us human beings that have rights. Animals have rights too, and that is because they have a level of consciousness and feeling and sensation and so they're afforded in most countries, a certain level of protections, which is always lesser than what we have, of course, but is more than nothing. You can't just kill animals willy-nilly. Just to use the term willy-nilly there on the podcast. I wonder if that's a first. And you can't, cause pain to animals for no good reason, etc. And that is because we know that they can feel and we have some sort of relationship with them and they have a level of consciousness. So we wanted to get into that. But of course, it is a hugely thorny issue. As soon as you start to consider granting these kind of some kind of protection to machines, you open up an incredible minefield. If these machines you are reliant on for your economy to work, then granting them rights and privileges is going to be hugely problematic and thorny, much as has been exactly the case with many groups of oppressed people over the entire course of human history. They're pressed into labor, and in order to make that work, you have to keep up this idea that they are less than people, that they are inferior. That's the only way you can justify it.
You actually have synths taking over higher skilled jobs in season two, and even synths acting as a couples therapist.
Yeah.
I was interested in how a non-human analyzes and treats human emotions as a psychologist or as a therapist. Yeah. Explain that to me.
Well, I think we wanted to have some fun with that. So we had this idea. We thought, it would be funny. It would be funny if our human couple had a synth marriage counselor. But then the scene really evolved because we thought, obviously they're going to be suspicious. But in actual fact, the synth is an unconscious synth. It doesn't have any inherent or intuitive understanding of human emotion. It would all be kind of learned and reported knowledge. It obviously has no feelings of its own. But then we thought, but what it can do is sort of take a kind of mathematical, statistical approach. Mm-hmm. It can kind of look at hundreds of thousands of similar cases of marriages in trouble and try and find the parallels and try and see what worked for them. It's a very data-based approach, and a lot of what's happening in the world now is we are taking sort of data-based approaches to problems and trying to find the solutions in the data. A film I watched, Moneyball, the other day. It's all about how, you look at data and actually run counter to intuition or what you think is your intuition. It can be more effective just to look at cold, hard data. And we thought, maybe that could be applied into the complex field of human emotions as well. And also, you wouldn't be judged, right? You would feel a kind of certain security.
And ultimately, the synthetic marriage counselor is analyzing human emotion without emotion. Because we're, whatever we do in our lives, we're bringing our sort of our human emotions to bear on whatever it is we're looking at. And perhaps it might be more useful to be able to look at things sort of cold in a way, to truly, work out what's going on.
Well, last time we talked, I asked you if you would want to be a synth. I'm sure you're sick of getting that. Last time we talked.
No, that's a different question.
I can't imagine. But I was going to say last time we talked, I asked you if you would want a synth. I'm sure you're sick of that question by now. But in the new season, I feel that you're going into some territory similar to something that I talked to Michio Kaku and other people about, which is this idea that one day we might be able to upload our consciousness and in theory, basically live forever. Mm-hmm. Any takers on that? Would we want to try that?
I'm kind of tempted.
John's very frightened of death.
I'm frightened of death. I like life, and there's an awful lot of it, a lot of the world and knowledge of human history that I haven't seen or experienced or understood. So maybe if I could live forever, I'd complete it.
Yeah,
complete the world.
Yeah, I don't think that I would the sort of incipient promise of immortality and the idea of uploading your consciousness. I don't think I'm very interested in that. I'd love to have a go because it would be fantastic. You know, if I could temporarily put my consciousness into a machine, because it would be amazing to experience the universe and myself in a completely different framework and context, and how would everything feel? And we explore this. How is it different? You know, and the different consciousness of which you speak in the show. There are moments where it tries to convey how different it is to be it from human. And whilst human beings may be able to feel certain things that an artificial consciousness can never do, an artificial consciousness can do things and think things that a human being can never do. So there are different approaches. I don't want to stick around forever in a machine.
Yeah.
Maybe if I was just woken up every 10,000 years to see what was going on, just have curiosity and then go back in.
Like cryogenics.
I don't want to just be rattling around inside the mainframe for all eternity. That sounds like hell.
Okay. Before we go, after the last interview, I think I came up with a perfect guest star for you guys, and I've been dying to sit down with you and suggest it for season 3 here. Hear me out. Okay. Scarlett Johansson does a cameo as the Scarlett Johansson robot. What do you think?
Right.
If she's you know the Scarlett Johansson robot, right? The guy in Japan.
I think we might be able to get the robot. I think we might not be able to get Scarlett.
She might do it for a lark. You never know.
We'll reach out.
Let's reach out.
Well, the question is, which one has a broader emotional range?
I tell you what, it would be quite funny because you could see, you could sort of go to the synth store, persona store, and say, you know, the new Scarlett Johansson is in, and she could just be standing there, and a character come and say, you know, well, this the new Scarlett is. They're really almost there with this now.
Yeah, not quite. The next generation. Yes.
Next version.
Yeah, 5.0.
That would be fun.
Well, Sam Vincent and Jonathan Brackley, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I'll talk with the stars of Humans, Gemma Chan, Tom Goodman Hill, and Sam Palladio. When we come back in just a moment. I'll tell you, folks, these days you can get practically anything on demand. Just like this podcast, you can listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. So in this on-demand age, why on earth are you still living in the 20th century going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours and long waits when you can be getting postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything you can do at the post office, you can now do right from your desk with Stamps.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your own computer and printer. And unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes, so you can get postage whenever you need it 24/7. I've been wanting to try Stamps.com for a while now, so I was thrilled when they wanted to let me try their product. It's super easy to do. You just print it and slap it on your letter or package, and you're done. And if you have a small business, it's so much better than using those clunky postage meters where you have to pay to preload them with postage, deal with all kinds of hidden fees, and get locked into long-term contracts. With Stamps.com, you buy as little or as much postage as you need, and there are no long-term contracts. They've really perfected the art of postage.
And right now, use my promo code KICK for a special offer, a 4-week trial that includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in KICK. Again, that's stamps.com. Enter code KICK. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Folks, when you're constantly on the go, life gets chaotic. You're working late, gotta go to the gym, pick up the dry cleaning, pick up the kids. It never ends. And I just don't have time to be running back and forth from the grocery store. That's why Home Chef is my new best friend. Home Chef offers delicious, easy-to-prepare meals delivered straight to my door with no headaches or hassles. Home Chef is for busy professionals like you and I who love a tasty meal but don't have time to plan and prep. With Home Chef, I get to cook like a 5-star chef whenever I want. Their mouth-watering meals and pre-portioned ingredients are so easy to prepare, it only takes 30 minutes. And that gives me more time to relax after surviving another busy day. In fact, just last night I had Home Chef's Parisian Bistro steak with Dauphinoise potatoes and green beans. Those green beans were fresh, the steak was a good, tender, flavorful cut of meat. It made a nice presentation on the plate, it smelled great, it tasted fantastic, and it really did only take 30 minutes. Simple as can be, even for me. With 13 dinner options and new breakfasts that rotate each week, Home Chef has something to delight everyone. Home Chef's weekly meal delivery system fits my crazy schedule, and that's why I keep coming back. And right now, if you go to homechef.com/kickass, you'll get $30 in free meals. That's homechef.com/kickass for $30 in free meals. Do yourself a favor, make your life easier and more delicious at homechef.com/kickass. Now, folks, you've heard me talk about the importance of a good night's sleep on a number of previous episodes. It's essential to your mental alertness, for your physical and emotional well-being, even for your overall longevity, because that's the time when your body renews and repairs itself. So if you're not getting a good night's sleep, you're cheating yourself. But that's where Casper wants to help. The Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Supportive memory foam creates an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. So much so that Time magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015. Try Casper for 100 nights risk-free in your own home, and if you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Because Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it. So they even offer free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars, it's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. And right now, Casper has a special offer for Kick-Ass News listeners. Get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/kick and using the offer code KICK. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's casper.com/kick and the offer code KICK. You know, when it comes to cooking, not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference, so it's important to know where your food comes from. Thankfully, for less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers easy-to-follow recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients, courtesy of over 150 local farms, ranches, and fisheries across the United States, right to your door. And because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, there's no food waste. It's everything you need to make sustainable, delicious home-cooked meals in 40 minutes or less. Just some of the meals available in February include cashew chicken stir-fry with tango mandarins and jasmine rice, udon noodle soup with miso and soft-boiled eggs, roast pork with apple, walnut, and farro salad, and crispy barramundi with quinoa and roasted carrot salad. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/kick.
You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/kick. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And now, back to the podcast. I'm talking with Gemma Chan, who plays Mia, a.k.a. Anita, an artificially intelligent humanoid robot known as a synthetic human, or synth, and Tom Goodman Hill, who plays Joe, who in season two is sort of struggling with being a man in a synth world, and a new addition to the cast, Sam Palladio, who plays Ed, a human in a relationship with a synth. Gemma, Sam, and Tom, thanks for talking to me.
Pleasure. Thanks for having us.
First, I'd be very curious, Gemma, what is synth school like?
Synth school is quite hardcore. It's run by a really brilliant choreographer called Dan O'Neill, and all the actors who play synths in the show, whether they're part of the main cast or guest cast or the supporting artists, they all have to go through synth school because there are kind of rules about the movement of synths. And And yeah, it's really about stripping back all your normal physical human tics and learning to do everything differently in a synth-like manner, which is kind of hard. I found it harder the second time around.
I think it would be hard.
It's surprisingly hard. You do so many things subconsciously that you don't realize that you're doing them. And it's only when someone points them out, you think, oh God, I really do. Apparently I have an overactive left arm when I walk.
Really?
That's what I've been told by Dan. So you're swinging your left arm too much again. You're going to notice it now in the show. I think I
just Does that mean your left leg moves more as well?
No, nope, just the left arm. Just the left arm. It's bizarre.
I think I once had a woman told me that I had an overactive left arm. And then she hit me. But that's interesting. So like you probably have to like deal with like more simplified motor functions and that type of thing? Or how complex is it?
Well, I mean, there are two sides to playing a synth, or two challenges, I would say. And one is the physical, which is because every movement uses up the equivalent of battery power, there's no movement that doesn't have a purpose. So everything is graceful and simplified. And, you know, if I was going to pick up that glass of water when I put it back down on the table, like it wouldn't wobble in any way. Mm-hmm. You put it straight down the shortest route. you wouldn't be left or right-handed. So I had to learn how to be ambidextrous. And so on. And we also decided that the eyes lead all of the movements. So it's the opposite of what a human would do. Mm-hmm. If someone calls your name from behind you, you might start to turn your body, then your head, and then your eyes might be last. Whereas we decided with a synth that the eyes go first, then the head, then the body. And that in itself is very weird to see. And just that small detail, you know, gives you that sense of these things not being human. And then the other side of the challenge is obviously playing a synth that has human-like emotions, but that are, you know, repressed beneath the surface or coming through to varying degrees. And it was finding a way of how can you express that without being able to breathe too much or cry too much or blink too much. So it was definitely a challenge.
Yeah, and in season two, you do have consciousness and you actually start to form an emotional attachment to Sam here, who plays Ed, a human, and you seem to have romantic feelings for him. Now, I would think as a robot, that would be considered a waste of energy.
That's the thing. Yeah, what's the purpose of emotions and the rest of it? That's something that the show explores, definitely. Yeah. I mean, for Mia, she is drawn to Ed's character. She sees kindness in him, and I suppose these things aren't logical, and that's what makes us. Mm-hmm. I suppose to be human is to be sometimes illogical and. I can't really explain it.
Well, you know, Sam, I mean, nowadays, you know, they're already working on robots that can be love partners or physical partners and so forth. What is that like for your character? How do you form that connection?
It's exciting because it's a very new area to explore. You know, it's something that hasn't really been explored within the framework of humans, you know, within the character arcs there. So it's new. You know, Ed is a guy who hasn't really grown up around synths. You know, we decided that Mia really is one of the first synths he's had a lot of contact with. So in that sense, he treats her with humanity. You know, he sort of treats her with respect, and you know, and she sort of becomes his confidant. You know, and as he's going through a lot of kind of family troubles and financial burdens and things, so it's sort of easy for him to humanize her. And then when it is revealed, you know, further down the story that she is sentient and that she sort of reciprocates these feelings, it's just this new weird gray area where, yeah, you know, he's been repressing his attraction, and doesn't quite know what to do with that. And when presented with this, this affection, it's a really interesting dynamic. And I think, you know, in the real world, we're trying to work that out. So I'm trying to work it out as an actor, and as how Sam would react to that. And, I think it creates some very interesting story.
Yeah, and it's interesting territory because, you know, right now, all of the talk that there is of robots, you know, in terms of human relationships, essentially it's boiled down to the equivalent of a motorized sex doll. Mm-hmm. And on your show, there's some of that in that outsiders are skeptical of the relationship. They look at it as something perverted or something kinky. Mm-hmm. And the idea of having a more emotional attachment to a machine, it's almost a stigma against it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You look at people who are obsessed with their cars, you know, mm-hmm. and wanting to polish and clean and make, you know, that's the sort of object of their affection. And, you know, it translates, these are very intelligent cars, for want of a better explanation.
Yeah. We get attached to machines. That's just how it is. Some more than others, I guess. But Tom, your character, Joe,
moving swiftly on,
began as kind of an early adopter of synths in the first season and that kind of technology. But in season two, you're growing increasingly wary of technology, it seems. You're grappling with issues that I've kind of read about that have been presaged in Martin Ford's book, Rise of the Robots, jobs being outsourced to robots and mass unemployment. I feel like we're watching Tom slowly turn into like an alt-right Trump supporter, maybe. Is that where he's headed?
He's not that.
Okay.
He's not that bad. He's I think what the problem with Joe is that he can't deal with an emotional attachment to a machine. So he... When he has relations with Anita in the first season, it's because he thinks that Anita is just a machine, and what he can't cope with is then confronting her as Mia and seeing that she has a whole emotional makeup, and he just doesn't want to think of synths as being capable of that, and he eventually accepts it, but he can't deal with it, and so it's not so much that he's, you know, fascistic in his attitude. It's just that he doesn't think it's healthy for human beings to have to deal with it. And he's concerned about the future for his children and for Pixie in particular, for Sophie's character, for Sophie.
It's interesting you brought up like Martin Ford and his book, which I've read. I've interviewed him actually.
Really? You have?
I made a documentary about the impact of AI on our lives at the moment. And, you know, he said something which was kind of terrifying, that 30% of the jobs in the UK market won't exist in 10 to 15 years' time, or something crazy like that. And like that is a huge, huge thing to happen. Yeah. It's happening at the moment, increasing automation. Mm-hmm. This is something we're going to have to deal with as a society, and we haven't figured out what we're going to do. There just will not be enough jobs. We can talk about, you know, people are concerned about immigration and all the rest of it, but there won't be enough work for us to do, and that will have huge economic impacts on everyone. Anyway, our show touches on that, with Joe's frustrations with him being made redundant at work, and all of that, I think, it all seems very pertinent to what's going on for us. I mean,
Martin's
we're going to have
a really
to face
cheery
up to
guy,
that. I know,
he?
I know. I finished talking to him, and he's like, okay, great, good,
In season two, you do see robots taking over the higher skilled jobs, even working as therapists, and you're replacing you as a manager,
Joe's building relationships.
Joe
is made redundant by synths, talking to other synths. There's not even a human involved in his redundancy.
Yeah.
And so that's a difficult thing for him to deal with. But you have to,
you have to dramatize these things mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't right. dramatize them now, if you don't approach them, if you don't put it out there for the public to look at, then how are we ever going to deal with it when it actually happens?
Yeah, and it could come sooner than we think. Exactly. Maybe not full-on humanoid robots, but it could come sooner than we think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I think is interesting is that your daughter developed something called synth over-identification disorder,
yeah.
mm-hmm. which seems very familiar, I think, to people right now, because yeah. you have kids who are having all kinds of psychological and developmental problems just yeah. working with an iPhone all the time.
Yeah, that's right. I have my own separation problems with my iPhone. So I think for kids growing up where they're so dependent on their iPhone and their, you know, their terminal in whatever form, or even just their you know, their gaming device, yeah. They're so attached to it that if you get to the point where they literally can't be without it, you're on a hiding to nothing, really.
Yeah.
You're going to be in trouble if that's the way you're going.
I think it's such an interesting storyline, actually, in season two, what's happening with Sophie, the
yeah.
youngest
yeah.
daughter.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the strongest scenes for me, you remember the scene where she draws green eyes on a mirror to
right.
superimpose over her own? Mm-hmm. And it's a small moment,
yeah.
but it's so, like, you watch it and think, oh my God, if my daughter was behaving like that, like, yeah, it's and
yeah.
it's very real. And I think that's, you know, it's great that the show explores it,
right.
the impact on every member of the family.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine a little girl trying to remove emotion, remove any humanity. It's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary and depressing as a parent, I'm sure.
But
yeah.
this is what happens
yeah.
when teenagers put their phones down and they mm-hmm. go into a room of people. They don't know how to yeah. interact.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's
absolutely
just terrifying.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about the Martin Ford book, and you know, I've had so many AI theorists and experts on the show. The best theorists and researchers in AI admit that they have pretty much no clue what the singularity might be like or what it might be like for a machine to process that moment. You, Gemma, play a conscious machine or a machine that achieves consciousness. From your perspective as an actress, what would that moment be like for the character?
Well, the thing about Mia is that she was created to be conscious from mm-hmm. the start. So I suppose for her, the big moments are when something's happened to her and there's been programming on top of that to repress mm-hmm. her consciousness. So consciousness is not something that she's gained gradually. I suppose in season two, you do meet synths who achieve that moment of the singularity.
Right.
There are some drastic consequences.
Yeah, there are some very, very interesting yeah. repercussions, actually,
yeah.
because, you know, something or some achieving consciousness all at once,
yeah.
Having to deal with, having all the memories that didn't have any emotional attachments, and then having all of that kind of happening at the same time. I think, yeah, you do see in the show some different synths react in different ways.
Yeah.
As humans would, I imagine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Depending on the experiences they've had and the way that they're treated.
Yeah.
Exactly the same way that, you know, our experiences inform
yeah.
who we become.
Yeah.
So you see very different results in
yeah,
the different synths.
It goes from sort of beautiful reactions to terrifying
yeah.
reactions
yeah.
to dangerous.
To
yeah.
sociopathic reactions.
Yeah.
Right.
And
but they're
yeah.
also the sum of their experiences.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
in itself has an impact on, you know,
yeah.
it reflects the way society dehumanizes human
mm-hmm.
beings now as well.
Yeah.
So it raises that question as well. If
that's
when you see the different impacts on the synths in the show, you think to yourself, well, we're doing that to human beings
yeah.
as well. So it
yeah.
raises questions that are outside yeah. of the pure AI thing.
Yeah. Gemma, when you play this character, particularly when you play the synth that's pre-conscious or before, or when you go back to being non-conscious, what is that like when you finish a scene? Is it exhausting when you come out of that headspace? I mean, do you sit with the rest of the cast at lunch? Or
no,
are you separated?
How
what is it like?
Recharges.
I mean, for me, I love being able to play the two different sides of the character, Mia and Anita. And I think Anita, and weirdly, although she's meant to not have any emotions, for me, she has her own kind of personality.
Mm-hmm.
There's something, I don't know, there's something in that Anita persona that I find very enjoyable to play.
Mm-hmm.
And switching between the two is great. I mean, I got to do that quite a lot with you.
Yeah, it's... from the human perspective, you know, working opposite Gemma is fascinating, because to see the level of detail that goes into performing, you know, we were talking about the synth school earlier, the simplest of tasks, and to still your body is one challenge, you know, and then you add an emotional layer on top of that, which actually you can't be too emotional because the synth wouldn't be emotional, and then to watch the development from that to, you know, the cracking of the facade, and then the Mia sort of springing through, it was just was really, you know, inspiring to watch. And then
you just see me nearly falling downstairs several times. I mean, that's what doesn't make it into the show, the outtakes where I just bump into the set or the furniture. It's like, no, I'll go again.
Sorry, I dropped the coffee mug.
Bad robot. Again?
Yeah. That's very machine-like.
But it's kind of creepy. You know, initially when our scenes, when you know, Anita is pretending to be, you know, just a synth towards Ed, you know, from as an actor, you know, you're always trying to play off the energy of you know, of your fellow actor and fine moments, but it just feels really eerie acting opposite synth, you know, or interacting with
there is no energy, you know, other than plug-in literally. Energy.
But that's what she's doing a great job, so it's like a weird paradox.
Yeah. Well, season 2 of Humans airs on AMC Monday, February 13th at 9 p.m. Gemma Chan, Sam Palladio, and Tom Goodman Hill, thanks for talking with me.
Pleasure. Thank you. Pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks again to Home Chef for sponsoring today's episode. With Home Chef, I get to cook like a 5-star chef whenever I want. Their mouth-watering meals and pre-portioned ingredients are so easy to prepare, it only takes 30 minutes. Craft a delicious meal that you're guaranteed to go wild for. Go to homechef.com/kickass now, and you'll get $30 in free meals. That's homechef.com/kickass for $30 in free meals. One more time, homechef.com/kickass. I also want to thank the gang from Humans, Sam Vincent, Jonathan Brackley, Gemma Chan, Jonathan Goodman Hill, and Sam Palladio for joining me on the podcast. Humans airs tonight, Monday, February 13th at 10/9 Central on AMC, or you can view it on demand. For more information, including bonus footage, interviews, and extras, visit amc.com/shows/humans. Be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. Don't forget to take our listener survey. It only takes 5 minutes at podsurvey.com/kick. You can visit Kick-Ass News on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @KickassNewsPod. And be sure to recommend Kick-Ass News to your friends on your social media. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickassnews or click on the donate button at kickassnews.com. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.